Hello and welcome to Charles in Charge. I'm Nicola Charles, all the way from Melbourne, Victoria, Australia. We are not in lockdown. We do not have a 15-kilometre limit. We are allowed to shop and move around vaccinated and unvaccinated at present. When we get to 90%, we're told that's going to change and the unvaccinated will be locked out. But the unvaccinated are not allowed to go to bars and restaurants. And to be honest, I don't want to with the vaccinated at present until we clarify what this horrible thing is that they've done to people, because it's not going well, is it? And we know it's not going well because Belgium has just announced about 8 minutes ago that 100% of all hospitalizations in Belgium are vaccinated people. The head of their largest hospital has just confirmed that in a YouTube video. He said he was himself surprised, but that's what they're looking at. And Australia, when you hear the numbers, which are broken down state by state, day by day, they're sitting at around 90% of hospitalizations and deaths that we're told are vaccinated individuals. It amazes me that the people who are most outraged about this are the unvaccinated, like myself, that we are not seeing a massive outcry from vaccinated people, because I think the problem is that there's not an outcry from people because they think they're fine, but there are a few videos going around where people have sort of started to have enough. And I posted one yesterday where it was a vaccinated guy saying that he always believed he was selfish, he always believed he was pro-vaccine, he always used to talk shit about anti-vaxxers or people he perceived to be anti-vaxxers. And then he met a vaccine-injured person, and instead he decided to try and help the vaccine-injured and rethink everything that he'd been thinking and saying for the longest time. But what's also really interesting about this whole scenario is that it's been discovered that in June 2021, quite recently, the UK government, on the government website, and I will share that after this podcast, the UK government has sent out a tender where they are asking businesses to obviously quote them on large-scale body storage, human body storage. So I think when you see it, and it's very real on a British government website, the time for conjecture and the time for name calling of conspiracy theorists, anti-vaxxers, of people who are concerned for you all and concerned for humanity, the time for all that is gone. I can't think of any other reason why the UK government would be sending out a tender for large-scale human body storage. Now, we are facing this awful pandemic law in Victoria, Australia, that's trying to be pushed through by Dan Andrews. And what's interesting about that, and something that the corrupt Australian media or British or American or wherever you are, really, they're all sort of in the same boat at the moment. But I'd explain a bit, a hypothesis I have about that a bit later on as well. They haven't mentioned the situation in Denmark. Now, everyone knows, and that the rumour mill has been saying that, you know, Denmark have scrapped all their COVID measures and everything. And yes, that's true. But the last thing that Denmark tried to do was exactly the same. Exactly the same as the pandemic law that Dan Andrews is trying to push through here in Victoria, Australia. In the sense that the law said that groups of people, one can assume that's those who don't want to be vaccinated, can be coerced or jailed and forced to vaccinate under this new law. Which, when you think about the timing of it, when you've got the vast majority of the population to vaccinate, that's what you want to do, isn't it? Because you've got the vast majority of the population to vaccinate, and then you're only dealing with a select few, a select group, as is mentioned in this pandemic legislation. Whereas if you'd only got the vaccination rate to 50 or 60% of the population, say, there was no way you could class that larger percentage of society as a group that would need to be jailed or coerced. It's simply not possible anyway. So Denmark protested, and they did a pots and pans protest, and they did it for 9 days. So for 9 days straight, millions of Danes went to the streets with pots and pans, and they just banged them and banged them and banged them, and they walked around the streets, and they went to their parliament, and they banged them and banged them and banged them for 9 days, every day, all day. And they did an amazing job. They got their message through, and it's a shame that so many people would need to walk the streets and do that. But as none of us have politicians anymore who care to listen to or want to listen to the will of the people they are paid to represent, little or no choice is left. I did see a clip at the weekend that was really worrying and horrible to watch, which was Dan Andrews clearly coerced himself by the people who pull his strings. Because believe me, these people aren't clever enough to come up with these sorts of diabolical global measures. This is just a local shit kicker, a local MP from Northcote. He didn't really come up with the Great Reset. He's just being paid a lot of money to implement it. He was talking about the small group of people who protested in Melbourne about climate change on Saturday, which was dwarfed by more than 10 to 20 times by the massive amount of people, 25,000 plus, who were protesting against the new pandemic legislation. And although he praised the climate change protesters, because obviously that feeds into his puppeteer's narrative, he actually said of the enormous amount of people, 25,000 plus, who protested against his new pandemic legislation, he said nobody cares what they think. Nobody's interested. Well, you know what, Dan? I'm interested. We're interested. And surprisingly, you're supposed to be interested. So how can the same MP from Northcote, the same politician, how can that politician say he wants the best for society and for the good of your health, and then very plainly say that he is not prepared to listen to anything that quite large group of people wants? Now, these are the groups of people that are left after the unions that were protesting and are no longer have been coerced and brought on side somehow. Somehow. Because I really don't believe all those construction workers vaccinated, and yet we're all done. We're all done protesting if we work in construction. Something dodgy is going on. I mean, the post office in Australia freaked out, and suddenly their vaccine mandate is gone as well. And when I looked at the figures the other day online about the amount of actual vaccinations that have been used compared to the numbers the government are saying have reached vaccination targets, they don't add up. So it could be fear of the masters. We must let the masters believe we've reached these targets, even if we haven't. But then that's a dangerous scenario, isn't it? Because under the pandemic laws, if you're going to coerce, arrest, do all the things you're claiming you want to do to those who won't toe the line, then the numbers in actuality would be a lot larger to deal with. Considering out of the 12,000 plus serving Victorian police officers that should be available at this time, thanks to suspensions, disciplinary actions, and everything that's going on with the mandates, there is believed to be at any one time only 3,000 serving police officers in Victoria, and Victoria is quite a large state. So my police contacts have confirmed that. I was very pleased to see on Saturday that the police were more respectful of the protesters, and I definitely think there's been a sea change there, because I guess the police that are on duty were forced to vaccinate and they didn't want to. So they very much feel what some of the protesters are feeling. But it was very important that this pots and pans protest over 9 days was held. Because I have great concerns about Victoria and Australia in general. And it really isn't fair, whether it's the Rockefellers, the UN, the World Economic Forum, America, China, whoever it isn't fair and it isn't going to work if you're going to come down this hard on Australians. We've already accepted the demolition of our lives. I don't expect to go to a restaurant with friends. I don't want to go to a restaurant with friends. I don't want my food prepared by what I know to be only the vaccinated until I know what the ramifications of that could be for me. See, the problem is for me, and I've said before, the upshot of getting COVID and having survived COVID myself is that it is a disease you can survive, and the majority of people sort of under 80 years old do survive, 99.98% rate or something. But these conditions and adverse reactions being faced by the vaccinated, some of them are not survivable, not without a heart transplant. And I'm just not entirely sure why the powers that be, our governments, believe us to be so stupid that we would wish to trade getting over a nasty upper respiratory infection for permanent heart damage. And the thing is, in the old days, whether it be a 60 Minutes interview or sort of a town hall where you've got an audience of people and they're allowed to ask their politicians questions, not pre-rehearsed questions, not a Jacinta Ardern where she says the approved media only. Yes, we know why they're approved only, don't we, Jacinta? Because you are not prepared to answer any questions of any real relevance. And now we see these leaders, these so-called leaders, for what they are. They are an absolute sham. They consider themselves above the law. They are all corruptible. They are all owned. They have all put their own self-interest above that of the people they were supposed to represent. Politicians and governments are supposed to be of the people, for the people, by the people. Our politicians are currently none of those. And for my money, that means they have not held up their part of the bargain. They are not operating within the law and the constitution of what they were supposed to be doing. And therefore, I do not know why we can't remove them. If you've shown incompetence in any other role in society, you are removed, and that's what needs to happen here. We've got our lame duck Prime Minister Scott Morrison, who seemingly does nothing about Dan Andrews. It's very, very sad. I don't see how Australians could ever trust anything governments ever say again. And I had a hypothesis while I was doing the school run this morning, which is a bit unusual for me to have to get going for the school run. That's why my podcasts are a bit later. In the past week, because we're trying to get our children back into learning and education, whether it be at school or homeschooling. And I was trying to think about the geopolitical landscape, and I was trying to think about it to distract me from the video I'd seen this morning of the concert in the USA where a number of young people collapsed and died. I was already worried about that scenario and that concert because everyone was excited to go back to normal after lockdowns and the pandemic. And the press, and stupid me, I sort of believed what I'd heard, that this was a crush injury and eight people had died as a crowd surged. And I think the reason I believe that is I once was someone who experienced that myself. I did a personal appearance when I was on Neighbours at a nightclub in Frankston, and it had a revolving dance floor, and it was revolving, albeit very slowly. And the crowd surged towards the stage when I came out onto it, and a girl fell and broke her arm. And I got very upset, and I got on the microphone and I said, "If you don't all stop pushing, I'm just going to leave." And I was very much kind of the mum in the room, and no one was expecting that. And it was devastating to me. So I saw what this crush of humanity can do. And now the videos have come to light of this concert in the USA, and there was no pushing and shoving, and there was no crushing. But there is a video of, and the music's awful, by the way. I don't know who this Travis guy is, but the music literally wants me, make me stick my fingers in my ears. That's modern music for you. These young people sort of collapsing and having seizures, and that's quite worrying because it ties into, EMFs and all the 5G stuff that I worry about, which I'm not going to talk about now. And so I was trying to distract myself by thinking about geopolitical motivations and geopolitical politics, because for the longest time, and we all sort of do believe that Joe Biden is a Chinese insert, he's a friend to China. You've got General Milley there on the phone with his Chinese counterpart, the head of the military in the CCP, saying, "Oh, don't worry, we'd never attack you without me giving you a heads up." Like, all very strange. But at the same time, what you must understand, and I've always known myself from personal experience, there is no honor among thieves. There is no honor among the corrupt. And some of these people fail to see that. And, at the beginning, I actually worried about our politicians, because I thought, I don't think they realize that once they've implemented these evil, evil measures that this awful cabal have come up with, that they themselves will be dispensable. But they don't seem to understand that. And I think they should a little bit more. Our own Premier, Dan Andrews, has already been thrown down the stairs. Boris Johnson got COVID-19. Donald Trump got COVID-19. A number of African leaders were in very suspicious death situations slash suicides around the time they rejected COVID measures and the vaccines. And so, whoever's running this is a little bit gangster. Epstein was got out of the way. He was suicide. John McAfee. There's a lot that's gone on that says gangster to me. And so while I was thinking geopolitically and thinking about Joe Biden, China friendly, China Joe, Chinese insert, possibly spy, I started to think about how that position of being trusted by China and being considered a friend could be abused by the corrupt. And it's long since been a concern of mine that, compared to the countries Australia aligns itself with, obviously part of the Commonwealth, you've got Canada and the UK, but you've got the USA and you've got countries like Germany and France. We are incredibly isolated, and we are isolated in Australasia. Australasia. We're called Australasia for a reason. And that reason is that geographically we are much closer to China than any of these other nations. And so we potentially have had a lot to gain. We sell more coal to China than anyone else. But we also have a lot to lose, don't we? If we could potentially be a target. And I was just wondering about if Australia is sort of up to no good, if it is, as rumoured, either owned by the USA as a corporation or in the crosshairs of being owned, because there are some extremely disturbing videos coming out from the elders of the First Nations of Australia, the Indigenous tribes. You may know them as the Aboriginal people, who are the oldest race of humans on Earth. They are to be revered and respected, and they are a very gentle people, a very spiritual people. And they have for, decades, over 100 years, claimed to be the victims of genocide and ethnic cleansing. And we did have in Australia that awful situation of the Stolen Generation, where the white man, the government, came in and just removed all the children. And then, of course, you put these children away from their tribes and into European white society in Australia and sort of filter out and water down really an ancient race of people that should be really protected and in as pure a fashion as possible. And so a lot of these elders are now doing YouTube videos, Telegram videos. They're trying to get them out there, saying that a lot of their people were coerced into having the vaccine. They were given T-shirts, they were given money up to $500 a shot, and they got $1,000 because they did two shots. And I think most of them that I've seen in videos say they were given Pfizer. And of course, they were told they were being given it for their own good. But the elders are saying that a lot of their people are getting very sick. They're upset. They're crying. They're saying they regret it. I don't like the polluting of any bloodlines from anywhere, but I think it's particularly sad. It's particularly sad if this has happened with the Indigenous tribes. Now, all school children in Australia, if you're not in Australia or you're not Australian, you won't understand that you cannot open an assembly. You cannot open a sporting event. You cannot open a concert in a park. You cannot really do anything outside or any kind of large gathering of people without first saying, before any other kind of speech, that we acknowledge and thank the elders of the ancient tribe who own this land. And it's really extraordinary. It's very respectful, and it's a very sweet thing that school children do, because it makes them ask questions. Who are the First Nations? Who are the first people? And that is because, I guess, on paper, definitely on paper, Terra Australis, the majority of Australia, the mainland of Australia, does belong to those First Nations, those Indigenous tribes. Okay, so the Commonwealth of Australia, that is the Queen's domain, if you like, is based around Norfolk Island, which is off Australia, and obviously we came here anyway. There are vastly more, white settlers here than there were Indigenous tribes, and you would imagine that it would be a situation where you would try to live harmoniously. But the Indigenous tribes have long since been a bit suspicious of that, and now more so, because I think we've crossed a line when we are coercing them to vaccinate against something they haven't seen any of their people get sick from. So that was quite worrying when I was thinking about geopolitical hypotheses, because our geographic location with regard to proximity to China, I would imagine that it would be something extremely valuable to the USA, Australia's geographical location. Now, we already know that for quite some time, a couple of years now at least, and they've told us, oh, this is an annual thing, but it's not true because there's a lot more. That there are a lot of US soldiers and Japanese soldiers, we all know how Japan feel about China, now doing training and exercises up in the Northern Territory. The Northern Territory is very hot, it's very removed, it's the least populated, and it's private. It's not like you would get people driving past doing a little video and then putting it on TikTok. These are out-of-the-way manoeuvres, and this has been confirmed by my friends in the military. Now, if we are in the midst of some sort of land grab, as claimed by the indigenous tribes, some kind of US takeover, as far as I'm concerned, two of my children are American. As far as I'm concerned and was aware, Australia is a friendly nation to the USA. It certainly appears to still be politically. So why so much darkness? Why so much secrecy? Why so many lies? What exactly is going on here? What exactly is going on? I feel that there could potentially be a very large scale, long range plan for Australia to become heavily militarized as an outpost for potentially a double crossing Biden against China. I could be wrong, but just thinking about our location, I find that very, very interesting. Now, I just wanted to touch on this situation where we're being sold the new climate lie, and people obviously either believe in climate change or they don't, and they believe it's a climate lie. And as is usual in these situations, the truth is somewhere in the middle. Now, it is true, and I've said before, that there is very little humanity can do to stop the sun dying. We cannot regas the sun. The sun is basically a ball of gas that has been burning, 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 and it's running out. It's running low on gas. It's actually in a phase where it's beginning to run low, and a lot of interesting things will happen. It will swell, it will shrink, and it will end up just a cold piece of rock like anywhere else when it finally does burn out, which is likely to be millions of years from now. And so you would imagine that, at least for our generation and the next generation and the generation after that, it's a case of I'm all right, Jack. Well, no, because we have been burning too much oil, because we have been existing in the age of oil. You know, there was the Stone Age, there was the Iron Age, all these different ages that came along, the Bronze Age, and we have lived essentially in the oil age, and we've become massively dependent on it. And I mean, oil is responsible for what we've been able to do with agriculture, with building, with roads, with infrastructure. The problem with that is that we have burned this precious resource, because I don't know if you really understand what oil is from underground, but oil is basically fossilized sunlight that was captured by organisms floating in the ocean. And it happened over millions of years with the greenhouse effect, and then eventually this turns to oil. And so what we've been doing, if we've been sucking out oil that is millions of years old, that was created over millions of years of this photosynthesis of fossilized sunlight inside microorganisms that became oil. And so we've been burning through it at a rapid rate in what is now obviously the oil age. And we've burned through about 400 billion tons of the amount of oil that is underground, 400 billion tons throughout this oil age, basically for as long as we can remember in our generation. That's how much we've burned through. The problem with that is that really there's a limit on what the earth can sustain and be burnt through. Because what we're doing is that, you know, people say, oh, it's terrible, you know, all that atmosphere and the pollution and these oil particles are going up into the air, the carbon emissions. You hear them talk about carbon emissions and the carbon footprint. Well, it's not as disastrous ecologically as you might think, because those carbon emissions going up into the air are something that would have happened anyway. Because it's the same thing that happens when a volcano erupts. It's exactly the same when the volcano erupts and spews ash up into the air. That's a carbon emission. It's a huge carbon emission. But unfortunately, we've sort of times it by 10,000. So it's as if we've had, you know, 10,000, 100,000 more volcanoes blowing up all at the same time. The problem is, and the thing that no one talks about, and this again sort of makes me wonder about geopolitically with China, is that we've actually passed, we've long passed the tipping point to do anything about climate change. And that's because of China, because China's behavior with regard to carbon emissions has already caused changes in the ocean, like anoxia, which is when the ocean ceases to move as much and ceases to have currents. Like the Gulf Stream actually just stopped at one point. The Gulf Stream, which is the movement in the Gulf, it just stopped and it became a lake. So there's not loads we can do if China doesn't do their bit, and China's made it very clear that they're not going to do their bit. And again, geopolitically, that could be why these other nations, Canada, England, Germany, America, Australia, who do attend these climate summits, it might be why they are trying to assimilate militarily and geographically. Don't forget, Australia just cancelled its French submarine contract to go with a submarine contract for nuclear subs. Very worrying stuff going on. Because none of their push forward for climate change and climate adjustment can work if China exists, if China either don't change their ways or are not emitting anymore, because they have already tipped us past the point. And as I said before, we've burned 400, remember that number, we've burnt 400 billion, it's probably past that now, 400 billion tons from underground with oil. We've just burnt it. It's actually very precious stuff, oil. It's a very precious stuff. And we've just burnt it like idiots. We'll probably find out in the future we should never have done that. And there is only 400 billion tons left underground. So that means we've used half of it, half of the precious oil, which again, when you think about global populations and how much we need oil and want oil, so there are between 400 and 700 billion tons of oil left. But once you get past 700 billion tons of burnt oil, which is all our resources, you've sort of gone past what the planet can sustain. And if you combine that with how much natural gas is underground that we could potentially burn, if you're basically saying that it's the end of everything we know and the Earth will basically be a big pressure cooker, very, very hot all the time, if we burn more than 700 billion tons and we've already burnt 400 billion tons, with natural gas, we could potentially burn 3,500 billion tons. So we do have the capacity to cook this planet alive if human behavior isn't restrained. So that is why they're talking about climate change. They know that they can't say to people, I wouldn't want it said to me, you can't drive your 4x4 anymore, you can't do this, you can't do that. So if you can't change human behavior, what do you do? Perhaps you cull humans. But again, let's say geopolitically you were successful in culling humans, and let's face it, they're well on their way. You still have the issue of China. So I have great concerns geopolitically about all this talk about climate change, which on occasion makes them look quite foolish, because we all know China is the big climate criminal. And yet we're buying nuclear submarines. We're aligning ourselves with all the most powerful Western nations in the world. There seems to be no mercy shown to the Australian people after being the most peaceful race I've ever had the pleasure of living amongst. And so we really, I think, are entering an important period of history where Politics is shifting and moving, yes, on a global scale, whether we like it or not. But more importantly, we are reaching the end of the oil age. We are reaching the end of that because we're reaching the end of the oil. Okay, it might not be in our lifetimes because it's been around for decades and decades and generations. But we are reaching the end of the stock. We are. And so I think we really need to think carefully about what's going on geopolitically, how that ties in with population growth or demise. But more importantly for me, how we are geographically located to China and why suddenly we are so shoulder to shoulder with the United States, who, unfortunately, and it breaks my heart to say it, I fear may be the bad guy in this piece. This has been Charles in Charge. I'll see you next time.